What does every successful CEO, entrepreneur, athlete, or even movie star have in common? They all have a coach. It doesn't matter if you're just learning to swim or if you're an Olympic medalist like Michael Phelps, you've always got a coach. And in the business world, there's only one coach. There is one influencer that is consistently ranked as the number one success executive coach in the world, and that is Marshall Goldsmith. Maybe you've read one of his dozens of books or thousands of articles. Maybe you saw him on television speaking with world leaders and Fortune 100 CEOs, or perhaps on his YouTube channel with over 1 million views. Any way you look at it, when it comes to the world of coaching executives, Marshall Goldsmith is the man. And today, I got to speak with him about the importance of slowing down, why effective communication is so critical, and of course, some of his favorite success stories and incredible people that he's had the chance to work with. When Marshall's team got back to us and said that he was available for an interview, we were over the moon because the man is a legend. So turn the phone on silent, shut off the television, and pay attention because there is so much wisdom in this interview that you could literally write a book afterwards. So sit back and enjoy. Good afternoon, everyone. Today, I am extremely excited to welcome Dr. Marshall Goldsmith to the show. He is an executive business educator, leadership coach, New York Times best-selling author of several books, and he has helped top performers create productive, results-driven work environments. He is currently the Thinkers 50 number one most influential leader in the world and has been recognized by Fast Company, Inc. Magazine, and many more as the world's leading executive coach. He has been incredibly active through social media with more than 760,000 followers on LinkedIn, well over 1 million views on YouTube, and has a thriving web presence, bringing the foundation of excellence and leadership management to the 21st century. And we are extremely excited that he got back to us and took time out of his busy schedule to be with us. So thank you, Marshall, for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
We're glad to have you. So in your own words, if you don't mind, could you tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I'll briefly introduce myself. I'm from a small town called Valley Station, Kentucky. Went to school in Indiana. I got a PhD at UCLA Anderson School. I was a college professor and dean when I was very, very young. Then for 40 years, I've done four things. Number one, I give talks or teach classes. I teach at the Dartmouth Tuck School, been to 99 countries speaking and teaching, have 11 million frequent flyer miles just on American Airlines. The second thing I do is I coach executives. I'm the coach of the CEO of Ford, Pfizer, Glaxo, President of World Bank, head of the Mayo Clinic, all kinds of wonderful people. I love coaching because I learn so much. Then I write and edit books and articles. I've done 36 books, three New York Times bestsellers. And then finally, as you mentioned, I do things online. I give away all my material. All my material you can copy and share and download and duplicate and use any way you want. And right now I'm adopting 100 people, teaching them everything I know for free. And the only cost is when they get old, they get to do the same thing. And I've had over 12,000 applicants for this program. So it's very exciting.
Wow, you are quite the busy gentleman.
Thank you.
Now, I know you've got your fingers spread across all these different areas. So what does it really take in terms of productivity and scheduling to be in control of all that at once?
Oh, I need lots of help with scheduling. So, I am a person who left to his own devices would be constantly lost and confused. So I get all kinds of help. I practice one thing called the daily question process. I have a woman call me every day. Every day she listens to me read questions I wrote and provide answers I wrote every day about my life. Somebody said, "Why do you do this? Don't you know the theory about how to change behavior?" I wrote the theory about how to change behavior. That's why I do it. My name is Marshall Goldsmith. I'm the world's number one ranked leadership thinker and the number one ranked executive coach. I pay a woman to call me on the phone every day just to listen to me read questions I wrote, provide answers I wrote. Why do I do this? I'm too cowardly to do it by myself and too undisciplined. I need help. And it's okay. It's
I
okay.
love that. I love that. It's no matter where you are in the world, in your life, in success, everyone still needs a helping hand.
One thing I'm so proud of is my book Triggers. 27 major CEOs endorsed that book. Why am I so proud? 30 years ago, no CEO would admit to having a coach. They would have been ashamed, embarrassed. Well, today they're not ashamed and embarrassed. Hey, how many of the top 10 tennis players have a coach? All 10. They don't have a coach because they're losers. They have a coach because they're winners. They're smart.
I love that. Now, how did you find this passion for coaching executives and coaching people?
Well, I got into leadership development business purely by accident. I was very lucky. I got to meet a man named Dr. Paul Hersey, and he was a very famous person in our field, and he let me follow him around to try to learn to do what he did, and one day he got double booked. He said, "Can you do what I do?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I need help. Can you do it?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I'll pay you $1,000 for a day." I was making $15,000 a year. This was 40 years ago. I was 28. I said, "Sign me up, coach." I did this program for the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, and they were very angry when I showed up. I got ranked number one of all the speakers, though, and then they were happy. They called him up and said, "Send Marshall again." He said, "You don't want to do this again?" I said, "Yes, sir." That's how I got into leadership development and coaching, similar. I was working with a CEO, and we did 360 feedback, and he said, "I got this kid working for us, young, smart, dedicated, hardworking, driven to achieve, creative, entrepreneurial, stubborn jerk. So it'd be worth a fortune to me if I could turn that guy around." I heard the word fortune. I said, "I like fortunes. Maybe I could help." He said, "I doubt it." I said, "Maybe I can do it." He said, "I don't think so." And that's when I came up with an idea. I said, "I'll work with him for a year. If he gets better, pay me. You don't get better, it's free." What did he say? So since then, there wasn't anything called executive coaching then. Since then, all my work as a coach is done on a pay-only for results basis. I've been doing this for 35 years.
I love it. Now, on 35 years, do you have any favorite success stories or any favorite students you've been able to work with?
Well, I've got a lot of positive stories. One of them was that, did you ever see a movie called Wall Street with Michael Douglas?
Yeah.
I was the coach of the real life role model that Michael Douglas followed around and learned how to act like a jerk. Now, he wasn't immoral or unethical like the man in the movie. He's a very moral, ethical man. Yet his score in treating people with respect for both direct reports and coworkers was a 0.1 percentile, 0.1. Well, they asked me to talk to him. I said, "You know, I have a degree in math." I said, "At 0.1, not very high." I said, "How do you treat people at home?" He said, "I'm totally different at home." I said, "That's fascinating. Single or married?" "Married. Have kids? A couple of teenagers." I said, "Let's call your wife up right now and read her these scores. Let's find out how shocked she really is." We called his wife. "You're a jerk. He's talking with the kiddies. Jerk, jerk." I said, "A pattern is beginning to emerge." I said, "I can't help you make money. You're already making more than God." I said, "Do you want to have a funeral that nobody attends other than for business reasons? Because that's where this trade is headed." He said, "I'm going to change. Not because of you or this company or money. I'm going to change because I have a 13-year-old son. And 40 years from today, if a man like you read that report about my son, I would be ashamed he was my son." And then he said, "My son already acts that way. Wonder where he picked that up. Maybe that was me." In 1 year, he got ranked to 53.7 percentile on treating people with respect. Above the company norm. Company norm was already pretty high. Probably deserved even better. Well, what I learned, anybody can get better. Every year he sends me a card. And 1 year the card said, "I still have better relationships with people, especially my wife and kids." The guy's a billionaire. What's that worth? Can't buy that.
That's incredible. And I think it pays testament to the fact of it's, sometimes it's a light switch moment when the blinders come off.
What's that?
That fast. Now, in your opinion, what really makes a fantastic leader to be that role model?
Well, I'm going to answer that from a couple of perspectives. First, in terms of perspective of the people I coach, do they get better? Three things. One, they have to have the courage to look in the mirror. It takes courage. Not easy. Two, they have to have the humility to admit they can improve. Because see, nobody's going to be already perfect, it's going to get better because they're already perfect. And then number three, they have to have the discipline to do the hard work and follow up required to change. Courage, humility, and discipline. I'd say those are three major factors. And then the second way to answer that question is, we did a book called Global Leadership, The Next Generation. Ask 150 high potential leaders around the world, what are the qualities of the global leader of the future, and how's the leader of the future different than the leader of the past? And five factors came up in that study. These are a broader study about leadership. One is global thinking. More and more leadership is global, not domestic or local. Two is cross-cultural appreciation, and really learning to work with people in different cultures and environments. Three is called technological savvy, not being a technologist, but understanding technology and how technology works. Then number four was building alliances and partnerships. More and more leaders are building alliances and partnerships, and its leadership is less hierarchical. And then finally, it was called shared leadership. Peter Drucker taught me the leader of the past knew how to tell, the leader of the future knows how to ask. Well, people manage knowledge workers today. And when we manage knowledge workers, we can't just tell them what to do and how to do it. We have to ask, listen, and learn. So those five factors are seen as a difference in leadership between yesterday and tomorrow.
I really like that. I think that it's so encompassing. And like you said, that it's no longer hierarchical to be a successful leader. And I think that's a shift that's happening now that hasn't happened ever in the future.
Well, you know, I totally agree with you. And again, if you look at why, today we manage knowledge workers. They know more about what they're doing than we do. The world is changing so rapidly. If I'm a CEO today and I know more about marketing than the marketing person, more about finance than a finance person, more about HR than the HR person, I do not have a leadership problem. I have a selection problem. I picked the wrong people. At that level, the level I work with, you hope they know more than you. They should know more than you. That's what they're getting paid for.
Yeah, you're creating the game plan, and you should have all the experts in all the different arenas.
That's right, yeah, and not be the expert.
Exactly. Now, I know that those are, you named some incredible skill sets there for leaders, but maybe as an employee, what would you say are some of the most necessary skills to set yourself up for success?
Well, one of the other questions you're going to ask me is influencing up. So I'm going to answer two questions at once on this one is, and again, I go back a lot to what I learned from Peter Drucker. I got ranked number one leadership thinker in the world. My intellect compared to him is that of a 10-year-old. This guy was so smart. He taught me so many things. I was on his advisory board for 10 years. Well, he taught me a few great lessons to help answer your question. He said, lesson number one, our mission in life is to make a positive difference, not to prove we're smart, not to prove we're right. Number two, every decision in life is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Make peace with that. Not the smartest person, the best person, a fair person, or a wonderful person. Made by that person. Whoever has the power to make the decision is going to make the decision. If I need to influence you, and you have the power to make the decision, one word to describe you, customer. One word to describe me, salesperson. You don't have to buy. I have to sell. Learning point. Sell what you can sell. Change what you can change. And if you can't sell it, you can't change it. Make peace. Don't waste your life dealing with topics that don't matter anyway. Only focus where you can make a positive difference. And also realize that when you start out, you are not the king of the world. Other people have more power than you. And they're going to make the decisions. And they're the customer, not you. And they don't have to buy. You have to sell.
I like that. It's a little bit of stoicism in there as well.
Well, I'm a Buddhist. There's a lot of Buddhism in there.
Yes, I love it.
A lot of Buddhism.
So now the second part in terms of, you know, communicating and managing up, would you just say that still just ties in 100% with influence and letting decision makers?
The key point to communicate up is if you have the power, you're the customer. So if you're my boss, you probably have the power. You're the customer. Sell to your needs. Don't sell to my needs. Sell in a positive way. Treat the customer with respect. Don't say bad things about the customer. It's pretty simple stuff. If you just think about your manager as a customer, you'll probably do pretty well in terms of influencing your career. If you don't, you probably won't. You probably won't.
I like that. Now, I'm sure with a lot of the people you coach, you go through all these 360s and where they want to be and where they can grow and learn. But where do we find the place to start? You know, those first steps, and how do we create those?
Well, the first thing when I coach people is, in my coaching, there's no arguing. Well, something's either required or it's optional. If it's required, there's no need to argue. If you don't want to do it, I just refuse to work with you. If it's optional, there's no need to argue. You get to do it if you want to. So therefore, there's no need to argue. Well, when you don't argue, you save a whole lot of time in life. You know, no arguing, no bickering. First, the required. When I coach people, here's what you have to do. You have to get confidential feedback from everyone around you. It's not a vote. You have to pick important behavior to improve. If you're not the CEO, you and the CEO need to agree that is the right behavior. If you are the CEO, you and the board need to agree that's the right behavior. You need to apologize for your mistakes. You need to talk to people about what you've learned publicly. You need to get their input, listen to it, follow up on a regular basis, and get measured twice. And if you don't want to do it, it's okay. I just won't work with you. But see, I don't get paid if you don't get better. There's no point in me wasting my time and yours. If you want to do it, then we can work together. That's how I always get started. You need to understand the rules.
I like it. Now, to go back just a little bit, one of the five skills you talked was about building relationships across different levels and growing a network. And could you expand on the importance of building and nurturing a network for just a few?
Yeah. Well, in the olden days, let's take IBM as an example. In the olden days, IBM literally had no partnerships. And they were proud of that. It was all you worked for IBM or you did not work for IBM. They didn't have partnerships. Today, IBM is almost all partnerships. They had no choice. Pfizer, I'm the coach of their CEO. Almost all partnerships now. They got relationships. One relationship, you're the competitor. One, you're the partner. One, you're the customer. One, you're the supplier. All these changing relationships. So more and more, especially in large corporations, realize you need to be this alliance builder. And when you build partnerships and alliance, it's a two-way street. You're not just taking, you've got to be giving because you don't have line authority. You can't make people do things when you're in a partnership relationship. You have to establish this mutual benefit society. So very different mindset to manage a partnership than it is to manage a hierarchical relationship.
Absolutely. And I think realizing that the world isn't a zero-sum game.
Right.
There's something that every party can gain one way, right. But to find it out.
Right.
Gotcha. Now, I'd like to go dive into some more difficult conversations. So say within the workplace,
sure.
Maybe it's between coworkers or, you know, bringing up your salary to your boss. Some of those situations where you're uncomfortable to start it, but what are some of the ways that someone can push through and get those difficult conversations started?
Well, the first thing, I'm not big on guilt and feeling shame and all that crap. Life's too short. Wrong me equally dead anyway. So most of the stuff you're uncomfortable with today, you know, 2 months from now, you're going to even remember what it was. So the first thing is I'm not big on being uncomfortable. Let's just do some case studies. Let's assume you're my boss. I think I need a raise. It's okay. It's perfectly not immoral, illegal, or unethical to think I need a raise. But I can come in and say, you know, Mr. Boss, I know you have the power to make this decision. In this case, I'd like a raise, and I think I deserve one for the following reasons. Now, if the boss says yes or no, the boss says yes, fantastic. If the boss says no, you know, you say, okay, you make your good point, and then you just salute the flag, and you either leave the company or you stay and live where you are. On the other hand, there's nobody's getting upset about it. This is not a morality play. This is just you expressing your opinion. Now, let's assume you do have the power. See, our big mistake when we have the power is we have to assume that we have to prove to the other person they're wrong. You have to do that. So you report to me and say, you know, I'd like to do X for the following reasons. If I'm your boss, I can say, you know, I understand that. You want to do X for these reasons. Do I understand the logic? You say, yes, you do. I say, that's great. I've thought about it. I still want you to do Y for the following reasons. You say, I disagree. If I have the power, you know, I can say, I understand. You're a very smart person. I respect you. In this case, we just happen to disagree. You say to me, boss, I think you're wrong. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I am. We're both guessing here. In business, nobody's got a crystal ball. You've made a certain set of assumptions, and you believe X is the right answer. I have some different assumptions. I think Y is going to be a better answer. Who knows who's right or wrong? I've thought about it. I respect you. I've made a decision. Here's what it is. Really appreciate you helping me out and doing this the best way you can possibly do it. As opposed to, let me point out to you why I'm right and you're wrong.
I like that. I think one of the biggest overarching topics that we've covered so far is the fact that simply being an open communicator and willing to listen, willing to ask the right questions, probably opens up one of the biggest bottlenecks in all of business. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And also not having to be right. My friend Alan Mulally is one of my favorite clients of all time. I was his coach at Boeing Commercial Aircraft. And then later he went on to be the CEO of Ford, where he was CEO of the year in the United States. The stock went from $1 to $18. He didn't take any of our U.S. government money, by the way. Amazing success story. He left the company and had a 97% approval rating from every employee in a union company. And he was a CEO.
Wow.
They love that guy. And he's a great person, just a great guy. He does work with me now. Just a wonderful, wonderful person. Well, He goes to Ford, and the company's losing $17 billion. So he says, all right, let's set priorities, red, yellow, green. Green, on plan. Yellow, I'm not on plan, have a strategy to get there. Red, not on plan, no strategy. So the first meeting, 16 leaders, five priorities each, red, yellow, green. All green. Everybody says I'm on plan. So Alan says, well, we are losing $17 billion. And if everyone is on plan, I guess we're planning to lose $17 billion. He said, we're still going bankrupt. That's not so good. Let's do it again. Finally, someone stands up and says, red. He applauds. He says, thank you for having the courage to say red. Then he says, let me be clear. You're not on plan. You don't know how to get there. You're kind of lost. He said, it's okay. Thank you for having the courage to say so. And then he said, I want to assure you of one thing. I'm the CEO of this company. On this topic, I know much less than you do. I don't know the answer. Why don't we work together and find someone who can help us find the answer? It doesn't matter what level of the company they're in. I mean, that's great leadership, not this egotistical crap about I have to pretend to know everything. Just tell them the truth. And let's find the answer from wherever there's good expertise. His attitude is, if I'm not the world's expert on this topic, why am I speaking? How am I talking?
And I think that's so important for, you know, our viewers that may not be leaders to realize effective leaders are willing to listen. And if you form your arguments in a positive light and it's not a battle, that they can approach something without the uncomfortable, without the feelings, like you were saying earlier. And if they are an executive, to realize that they can always better themselves by surrounding with more potential exceptional levels of influence.
Exactly. And getting over that, I have to win all the time. I have to be right. Or I have to be ashamed if I don't win. You have to be ashamed. You're not going to win everything anyway.
I like it. So now what is new in the world of Marshall Goldsmith? What new projects? I know you mentioned your 100.
Yeah, let me describe the history of that. So I go to a program, and it was sponsored by Aisha Bursell. She was ranked as one of the top 15 designers in the world, and now she just got ranked as one of the top business thinkers in the world. So I go to this program, and she wrote a book called Design the Life You Love. So she said, all right, who are your heroes? So I write down the name of my heroes. I've already mentioned a couple of them, Peter Drucker, Alan Mulally, Francis Hesselbein, Richard Beckhardt. Then she said, why are they your heroes? I said, well, these are just wonderful teachers, great teachers, and they're so generous, they never charged me any money for all the help they gave me. Then she said, why don't you be more like them? Why don't you be more like them? I said, that's a good challenge. So I decided I'm going to adopt 15 people, 1, 5, 15, teach them everything I know for free. And when they get old, they do the same thing. I made a little selfie video and put it on LinkedIn. It turned out to be the most widely viewed video in the history of LinkedIn. I have 12,000 applicants for the 15 positions. I ended up saying I'm going to raise it from 15 to 100. I've already selected 55. I'm going to do 45 more in the first 100. And these are very distinguished people. I mean, I have 5 of the top 50 business thinkers in the world, multi-million selling authors, the executive producer of Sesame Street, the mission control director from NASA. I mean, you know, on and on and on. Well, 12,000 applicants, you can be a little picky, you know.
Just a little bit.
Just a little picky. And then, yeah, Harvard Business School had 9,700 applicants for 900 positions. I had 12,000 for 100 positions. So, yeah, you can be a little picky. And then I decided that I'm going to have another 100 get adopted, and the next 100, maybe not so rich and famous. You know, people that haven't achieved so much yet have the potential to be higher level, which is younger people. How old are you?
28.
Oh, you should definitely apply. You should apply for the 100 aspiring coaches.
Okay.
Nothing to lose.
No, not at all.
And if you win, you hit the jackpot because you get to be around the president of the World Bank, Alan Mulally, my friend who was CEO of Ford. You get to meet all these other 100 people. And we are going to admit 100 younger people, people like you, who haven't had the time to write, you know, sell 10 million books.
Now, when is the time frame for all this starting between your two groups of 100?
Well, the first group, sorry, started. We've got 55 selected. I haven't selected any of the second 100 yet.
Gotcha.
Plenty of time on that one. I would send in an application, just say 100 aspiring coaches. Mm-hmm. Send me, Marshall at marshallgoldsmith.com. And then all you have to do is send me your bio, reason you should be selected and how you plan to give back to others when you get old.
Okay. I like it. I love that that is the requirement of how are you going to give back? How are you going to pay it forward?
Right.
And that's been something that has been ingrained in me since I was young. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you want to be selfish, but then when you realize that you shouldn't be, it pays you back in spades every single time.
That's right. I've gotten so much out of this project, you know, and it's all a give back for me, and it's no charge for anything.
That's exceptional. Now, I know you've listed quite a few of your heroes, but on a different page, do you have someone who inspires you?
I would say, well, it's very interesting you mentioned that. I would say my heroes all inspire me, number one. Number two, though, just this last week, in fact, day before yesterday, I had an inspirational experience. I got to go, I was on Broadway. I have a home in Rancho Santa Fe, California. My second home is in New York City. My third home is in Nashville. So I was in New York City. And I went to a Broadway play, Hello, Dolly, starring Bette Midler. It was very inspiring. She's 71 years old. And she was just out there busting it. And, you know, she's worth about $350 million. I don't think she was doing it for the money.
Hmm.
All in the heart.
Just all about passion.
It was wonderful. It was the only Broadway play I've ever been to where they got a standing ovation before the play was even over. People are standing up. You know, just wonderful. Very inspirational, though, to see her up there at 71 just busting her butt. Very, very inspirational.
Now, do you have any favorite book recommendations for everyone
else? Yeah, I have a few. I'm a Buddhist. My favorite Buddhist book is one I always recommend called Old Path, White Clouds by Thich Nhat Hanh, T-H-I-C-H-N-H-A-T-H-A-N-H. Old Path, White Clouds. A wonderful book if you want to understand Buddhist philosophy. Then a couple of other books. My two books I'd recommend on my own are What Got You Here Won't Get You There, a mega successful book, and then another one is Triggers. Those two were both ranked in Amazon as two of the top 100 leadership and success books ever written. So I recommend those two. Then just a general great book on leadership I recommend for my friend Jim Kouzes. It's called The Leadership Challenge. And then finally, my friend Frances Hesselbein, H-E-S-S-E-L-B-E-I-N. She wrote a book called Hesselbein on Leadership that I recommend. So those are just a few recommendations.
Excellent, excellent. Now, on your books, with you said you've got currently over 32 books that you've written and edited?
36.
36. And so what is that process like to create so much valuable content? Is it daily that you're always working away, or do you schedule time out for that? Or
you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. I have right now, I'm working on one book with Sally Helgeson, and it's about women in leadership, and she's doing most of the work. So that one is going to be mostly her with me helping out just a little bit. I did one with Alan Weiss the same way, and mostly him doing the work. It's called Lifestyle, and me helping out some. Then I've got two or three edited books I'm doing with Sarah MacArthur, my friend. She's doing most of the work, and I'm helping out some. And then you know, I'm working with my friend Mark Ryder on one, the newest book. I've done three books with him. This one is called Living Your Own Life. And in that case, I'm doing more of the work, and he's also a valuable contributor, though. So he and I have done three books together, and they've all been New York Times bestsellers. And the key is, and I can say this without bragging, all three are incredibly well written. Why can I say that without bragging? I didn't write them. No, I come up with the ideas, and he does the writing. Now, I'm a very good professional quality writer. He's much better than me. I talk, he writes. We have a great partnership. Now we're doing our fourth book together, and they've all just been mega successful. And he's also my agent. So we have a great partnership. We split everything 50-50. So, for example, my last book is called Triggers. So he says, how about we call this book Triggers, Triggers? What do you think of that idea? I said, I think it's a stupid idea. That's a dumb idea. Excuse me. He said, dumb idea. I said, how dumb is it? I said, that is so dumb. Triggers. That's like a horse or a gun. He said, I just got offered a $1.2 million advance for a book called Triggers. You know what I said? I love the name Triggers. Let's go with Triggers. It's good to have a good partner.
Absolutely. You just have to let the market tell you sometimes.
That's it. He was right and I was wrong. It's okay.
Love it. And it's all about, like you said, partnering up with the right people that are smarter than you, that are working in the ways that you're looking for.
So they can write better than you.
Yeah.
And they're a better agent than you.
Fantastic. Now, this is a fun one. If you could have a conversation with anyone, past, present, future, fact or fiction, who might that be?
Buddha.
Great one.
Yeah, I'm a Buddhist. I'm not a religious Buddhist. I'm a philosophical Buddhist. To me, Buddha was amazing. You have to put this in context. Buddha was around about 2,600 years ago. This guy said things 2,600 years ago. There was no print. There was no writing. There was no technology. He said things 2,600 years ago that transcended time and space and culture and talked to me today. That's pretty impressive. That's quite impressive to do that. And amazingly deep stuff. 2,600 years ago, it still resonates today.
I think that would be quite the interesting conversation to have.
Yes.
Wonderful. Now, final question here. Is there anything that you wish that I had asked or talked about?
Yes, I'd like to finish with my best coaching advice for everyone in the whole world.
Wonderful.
This would be great, not only for all your listeners, for you. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Take a deep breath. I want you to imagine that you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. You're on that deathbed. Here comes your last breath. Right before you take that last breath, you're given a beautiful gift. The ability to go back in time. The ability to go back in time and talk to the person that's listening to me right now. The ability to help that person be a better leader. Much more important, the ability to help that person have a better life. What advice would that wise 95-year-old you who knows what really mattered and what didn't and what was important and what wasn't, what advice would that wise old person have for the you that's listening to me right now? Don't have to say anything or write anything. Just answer that question in your mind. Whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of a performance appraisal, that's the only one that's going to matter. That old person says you did the right thing. You did. That old person says you made a mistake. You did. You don't have to impress anybody else. Some friends of mine interviewed old folks who were dying and got to ask this question. What advice would you have? On the personal side, three themes. Theme number one, three words. Be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not next year. Be happy now. Hey, gray Western disease, I'll be happy when? When I get that money status, BMW, condominium, I'll be happy when? We all have exactly the same when. Learning point from old people. Got so busy chasing what I didn't have, I could not see what I did have. Now let's just take you. You might be listening to me thinking, what a lucky old man. Guy's worth millions of bucks, sold all these millions of books, famous, gets to meet all these fancy people. Oh, I wish I could be him. You got something I don't have? 40 years. Now what's that 40 years worth? You want a couple of bestsellers for 40 years? You got it. We got to trade. You can have those books. Have that money. Take it. You can have the money too. At 40 years, what's that worth? That's worth a lot. Well, don't forget, you know, you probably got health and happiness and youth. Don't get so wrapped up chasing what you don't have. You don't appreciate what you do have. Learning point number two, friends and family. I'm sure your listeners work in nice companies. When you're an old man on a deathbed, none of your coworkers wave goodbye. You realize these friends and family, they're the only people who care. Learning point three, if you have a dream, go for it. If you don't go for it when you're 28, you may not when you're 38, and you probably won't when you're 88. Doesn't have to be a big one, maybe a little one. Go to New Zealand, speak Spanish, play guitar. Other people think your dream is goofy. Who cares? It's not their dream, it's your dream. Not their life, it's your life. I had a very embarrassing experience a couple of years ago. I was teaching my class, and I said, go to New Zealand, speak Spanish. Guy raised his hand. He goes, we're in Spain, you idiot. We all speak Spanish. Business advice isn't much different. Number one, life is short. Have fun. Number two, do whatever you can do to help people. And number three, just go for it. Old people, we almost never regret the risk we take and fail. We always regret the risk we fail to take. And final comment for me, thank you so much for asking me to talk with you. Hope our time together was useful, maybe help your listeners have just a little bit better life.
That was exceptional. I normally ask for words of wisdom at the end, but you more than blew me away with that there.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate the time that you've taken out of your busy schedule to be with us. We'll be in touch. Once again, you've shared so much incredible knowledge. I know the viewers are going to absolutely love it.
Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap. What did you think? Let us know your favorite tip that you learned in the comments below, down in that section. If you know someone who could use a bit of motivation, could learn a little bit about being a better leader, be a pal, share this link with them. I know that they will appreciate it. We certainly will, because sharing is caring. Below, we've included links to Marshall's website, his YouTube page, his dozens of books, his newest programs, and so much more. So if there's something that we talked about and you would like to find out more about it, everything is below in the description box. We've tried to make it easy. As always, click subscribe right down there in one of the corners so that you never miss a video. Every Wednesday, we're going to be releasing brand new interviews with experts, influencers, the top performers from across the globe, so that you can learn the very best tips right from the source. Also, don't miss open enrollment. Our course, Millennial Magnetism, has been an astounding success. We've loved helping dozens of lives, and we would love to help you too. So click below for the description about how you can unleash your inner awesome in only 10 minutes a day, boost your social confidence, talk to anyone, grow your network, read body language like a pro, everything and more, it's all in there. But I'll talk about that later. Right now, all I have to say is that until next time, ciao for now.